behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
I like the John part of it. Fires left side. Got a man there. Stevie catch. Touchdown!
Really, we still got action.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Inside the 10. 5-yard line. Touchdown! C.J. Spiller!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO. Tonight, Murph's joined by defensive lineman Terrell Troop, the associate director of the Pro Football Researchers Association, Ken Crippen, and from the Houston Chronicle, John McClain. That and your phone calls tonight on The John Murphy Show.
This place is pandemonium!
Touchdown, Buffalo! Leotis McKelvin brings it all the way back!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hello, welcome. It is Tuesday night, The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, and we're here for until 9 o'clock tonight to talk about the Bills and the NFL and today's OTA session, and a lot going on for the Bills and the NFL today. We're happy to talk about it with you. You heard the guest rundown. Want to hear from you as well. The phone line's open. Here's the numbers. 803-0550 if you're calling in the Buffalo calling area. 803-0550. Outside 716, you can ring us up toll-free. 1-888-550-2550. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show, and you can email the show, johnmurphyshow@bills.nfl.com. And as we said, we've got a lot to talk about tonight, including what went on the field today, day two of this week's organized team activity. The team is right in the middle of the OTAs. Five down, five to go. We'll give you a couple of thoughts and our takes on what we saw out there today, and we'll hear what some of the players and coaches say about what's going on and what went on out there today. We want to talk about this, too, and this is where we want to engage the listeners. As you heard Mike Shope and the Bulldog talk about, the Bills rookie tour is coming up this Thursday. It is an annual tour trying to give Bills rookies kind of an overview of what Buffalo and Western New York are all about. It's about it's an afternoon. They start 1 o'clock here at One Bills Drive, and they wrap it up with dinner in Niagara Falls. This year, the trip includes a stop at the Naval Park in downtown Buffalo, a stop at the New Era Cap Company on Delaware Avenue in Buffalo, a stop at the Buffalo Zoo, and then a visit to Niagara Falls. So look at the falls at Prospect Point and have dinner at Hard Rock Cafe in Niagara Falls. A full afternoon for the Buffalo Bills rookies. About 21 of them are going to make the trip, including second-round pick Kiko Alonso, the linebacker, and who else? I'm looking at second-round pick Robert Woods, the wide receiver from USC. Quarterback E.J. Manuel is going to make the trip. Wide receiver Marquise Goodwin of Texas will make the trip, the third-round pick. Most of the draft picks, 21 rookies in all, Duke Williams and Jonathan Meeks, Dustin Hopkins, the kicker. They'll all be there for the Buffalo Bills rookie trip, which is this Thursday, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. If you, here's a question for the callers, if you were designing the itinerary for these Bills rookies, what would you put on that itinerary? You heard what their plan is. They're going to go to the Naval Park. They're going to go to New Era Cap. They're going to go to the Buffalo Zoo, and they're going to go to Niagara Falls. Keep it in mind, it's a one-day thing. If you could put one more item on that itinerary, what would it be? Where would you take these Buffalo Bills rookies to fully indoctrinate them to what Buffalo and Western New York are all about? One of the places that occurs to me is the site of the old War Memorial Stadium, Jefferson and Best, Johnny B. Wiley. The glorious history of the Buffalo Bills played out right there at Jefferson and Best, the Johnny B. Wiley Sports Complex now, and there is still the facade from the old War Memorial Stadium standing there. I would show them that. I would show them pictures, maybe show them video on the bus of what went on inside that building. If they really want to indoctrinate themselves into the history of this franchise, why not start there with the AFL championships of the mid-1960s? I would show them that. I would probably take them through some Buffalo neighborhoods, too, and they're at the zoo. You know, you could do the North Buffalo area. You could do, there are portions of North Buffalo that are definitely worth looking at in terms of housing, obviously, for some of these players who may want to buy a house. But I'd take them all over. I'd take them on the east side. I'd take them to the Broadway Market if they really want to indoctrinate them into the culture of Buffalo and the feel of Buffalo. I would obviously they're going to be at the Naval Park. They'll get a good view of the waterfront down there and the housing options that are down there. But what would you include if you could put one thing on that itinerary anywhere in Western New York? for those rookies? Where would you have them visit? What would you have them do on that rookie tour itinerary if you could add just one thing? 803-0550, the number to call with your suggestions. We'll pass them along to the powers that be. This rookie tour is Thursday. If toll-free outside Buffalo, maybe you want to include something that's, you know, within a day's drive outside Buffalo, they should look at. But if you want to call outside of Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, what one stop would you include on that Buffalo Bills rookie tour itinerary? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. What would you do to show those players the best of Western New York or give them the feel of Western New York? That's, I guess, what we're looking for on the rookie tour. It is Thursday this week. They'll be going. We'll have coverage of that on BuffaloBills.com on Thursday of this week. Before we get to phone calls, let's talk a little bit about what went on today in the OTAs. The defense had a pretty good day today. A lot of work on red zone offense, in particular the running offense in the red zone today, but the defense seemed to get the better of the offense on most of the plays. Some pretty good plays by a number of players on the defensive side of the ball. Maybe the biggest news of the day was that wide receiver Stevie Johnson slowly working himself back into practice. He has not practiced since April 16th, first day of the voluntary veteran minicamp, when he tweaked his back. A back injury kind of flared up. He also has an ankle that's been bothering him, but he was back on the field for individual work and some of the drills today, and he talked to our man Chris Brown about finally getting back to practice.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely happy. You know, at first they say I just come out here and do some drills on the side, but, you know, I wanted to get out there and run and test it out and see how it is. And it felt good. You know, I still got point pressure in my back and in my ankle, but at the end of the day, I was out there and I was able to complete it, so I feel good about it.
Sounds like a pretty good step back for Stevie Johnson. He says just being out there on the field, just going through some of the drills with some of his teammates, gave him a good feeling and let him know that he was on his way back.
Yeah, definitely, and it gives me it makes me feel like I have a role. You know, I don't like sitting out of practice or anything. Because I feel like I can't talk to nobody, you know, because I'm not in that fire with them. But, you know, just doing the little bit that I did, you know, I felt like I had the power to tell some people, hey, do it like this way, run the route like this. Or, you know what I'm saying, when you look at it, make sure you run it a certain way, you know, because I was out there with you. So it just felt good, you know, being back.
Stevie got in work on the individual drill. Stevie Johnson got in work in some of the drills with the wide receivers. What about moving forward? And is he going to be able to do more maybe later this week or next week in the four OTA sessions next week?
I don't know. You know, today was just it was random. You know, I wasn't even supposed to do what I did. And, you know, I ended up getting through it. So, you know, we'll see. I just play it by ear and continue working on it. Go in there right now and get some work. And we'll see what happens for the rest of the week or even mini camp, whatever.
Stevie insists that he will not be missing time when training camp opens in late July. He says he will be ready to go for that. The coordinators talked today. Nathaniel Hackett on the offensive side of the ball and Mike Patton on the defensive side of the ball. You know, we've talked about this a lot on the show, the versatility of the Buffalo defense, the fact that it's hard to get a read on who's playing where, what this defense looks like. We had a question on the show last night about who's playing on the D-line, and just hard to answer that question when you see the different bodies shuffling through there, guys who play both defensive line and linebacker on a fairly regular basis. Mike Patton, the new defensive coordinator, talked about that today and talked about his philosophy of having all these many moving pieces in his Buffalo defense.
Again, we're going to be aggressive, relentless. I think you can eliminate some of the youthful mistakes by putting pressure on people. And again, I think we've been pleasantly surprised with the cumulative intelligence of the group. We've been able to do a lot early. But again, we just feel like we're building a wall, and every day we're, you know, it's a cliche, we're putting a brick in the wall. We just want to make sure it's a good solid brick, and we want to build this thing from the ground up. So we've started early focusing more on fundamental stuff than scheme, but again, we've still had to throw a lot at them schematically just to get up to speed. We don't want to go too slow with it. I've always been a big believer of the sponge theory. We want to throw stuff at them until we feel it's saturated, then pare it back. So I think we've done a good job blending the fundamental stuff with the schematic part of it, and the guys have responded and have really gotten their, can't say nose in their books anymore, you got to say nose in their iPads, but they've done a good job with it.
Mike Patton talking about his defense, about how much he has put in so far with the installation process continuing. Also talked about the versatility and the multiple positions, and that's really what we've come up against when we've talked with individual players on this defense. You know, Jerry Hughes, spoke the other day about how he plays a couple of different positions now. Marcus Doughton the other day, he has some versatility. And that really seems like that is a key of what Patton wants to instill in this Buffalo defense. Well, let me have him explain it to you. When we get, you know, kind of confused about who's playing where on defense, Mike Patton says that's exactly the way he wants it.
I think a cornerstone of the system is flexibility. And you have to have the ability to have guys play multiple positions and play multiple jobs. If you want to confuse an offense, I think you have to have guys that can be a defensive end, an outside linebacker, a safety, an inside linebacker, a nickel, an outside corner, a safety. So the teams have a big part of the NFL is identifying guys pre-snap. And again, we want to limit the amount of pre-snap information we're putting out to an offense. And that's why we look for guys that have that type of versatility. And then at the same time, you're cross-training guys to play other positions. When injuries are a part of the game, and we're always in the business as a coaching staff to put our best 11 out there, and we want to be in a position to do that. So when you have guys that know multiple jobs, that makes it a lot easier.
A cornerstone of the system, he says, flexibility. The ability to move players around, to have Mario Williams line up as a pass rusher, but you know, drop into coverage from time to time, play defensive end slash linebacker. The same for several other players. A cornerstone of the system is flexibility. I think that's a good way to think about what they're trying to do on defense. You know, people think of the Bills' defense now in name, I guess, a 3-4, and I don't know if that even applies anymore. The days of a straight 3-4 with Fred Smirlis or you know, Sam Adams or somebody lined up in the middle as the nose tackle, taking on two blockers and two gapping and being the anchor in the middle. I don't think that's the kind of 3-4 they're playing here. If, in fact, they will line up, it's a 3-4 defense. I think it's going to be very flexible. I think it's going to be very versatile. And I think there are several players now and probably into the season who will have a couple of different roles to play. That includes, I think, Alex Carrington. He had a good day in the OTAs today. Carrington broke up a couple of plays, including a screen pass that he recognized quickly and was able to chase down from behind. Carrington, a couple-year veteran with the Bills, who has played both linebacker, outside linebacker, and defensive end, now finds himself lining up inside at a defensive tackle position. We talked with Alex Carrington after practice today and asked him about the screen pass that he was able to run down and the fact that he is working out of a number of different positions right now.
Today I was lined up mostly at three technique. I just happened to be in the right spot at the right time, man. Coach called the plays. I just got to do my job, you know, and some of the stuff, like the screen he was talking about, I just felt the offensive lineman leave early, and, you know, that was my key. So just trying to become a smarter football player, you know.
Alex Carrington now moving into his fourth year in the league, a former third-round pick of the Bills out of Arkansas State. As I said, he's played outside linebacker. He's played defensive end. He's been asked to do a lot and being asked to do a little bit more this year. We asked him if all that movement from position to position helps him make plays like the one he made today.
This staff is, you know, Coach Patton doing a good job of just throwing stuff at us, you know, to see what we can absorb. And I know now with that experience of, you know, playing different positions, it's a little easier to take in, haven't done it before, so yeah.
That is Alex Carrington, defensive end for the Buffalo Bills. He's on the defensive line, we can say that much. And again, this defense is going to be fun to watch as it evolves over the next weeks and months. The NFL news today deals with the Super Bowl and the location of a couple of Super Bowls down the road. This next season, the Super Bowl, obviously, in New Jersey, East Rutherford, New Jersey, MetLife Stadium. The following year, January of 2015, Glendale, Arizona, University of Phoenix Stadium. At stake today, Super Bowl 50 and 51. And the 50th Super Bowl will be held in the San Francisco Bay Area. The Super Bowl the following year goes to Houston. The team owners voted in Boston today for the 49ers' new stadium to host the 2016 game, January of 2016. That stadium is going to be in Santa Clara, California, and it will open not this year but next year in Santa Clara. So they'll have a couple of regular seasons played there before they host the Super Bowl. The only previous Super Bowl played in Northern California, 1985 at Stanford Stadium, the Dolphins and the 49ers. I happen to be at that Super Bowl. The 51st Super Bowl goes to Houston, Texas, in January of 2017. Houston beat out Miami, which was interesting. The Miami, of course, had the stadium failure in the legislature in Florida a couple of weeks ago, which made its application to host the Super Bowl not very strong. Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, talked today after the announcement was made about why Miami's bid fell short.
I think it's, you know, the stadium at the end of the day. You know, their proposal was really quite exciting. they talked an awful lot about the great history and tradition we have of Super Bowls in Miami. And I think owners would like to be in Miami. But, you know, it's competitive right now. We have great stadiums coming on board that we haven't even played an NFL game in that are going to be hosting a Super Bowl. Others that are investing significantly to make sure their stadium is state-of-the-art and is a great platform and a stage for the Super Bowl. That's what we want.
That is Roger Goodell talking today at the news conference in Boston about why Miami did not get a Super Bowl awarded to that city and why Houston and San Francisco will. Coming up later in the show at 8:30 or so, 8:25, we'll talk with John McClain of the Houston Chronicle about the Houston bid for the Super Bowl and Super Bowl 51. We'll talk with him about that. And then the play-by-play voice of the Niners, Ted Robinson, will join us a little bit later on in the 8 o'clock hour to talk about the Santa Clara Stadium and the 49ers being host of the Super Bowl. So that's coming up a little bit later on in the show. We started out the show talking about the Bills Rookie Tour, which is coming up Thursday, the 6th annual Bills Rookie Tour. 6 years they've done it. They're going to the Naval Park. They're going to New Era Cap. They're going to the Buffalo Zoo. And they're going to Niagara Falls. We put the question out there. If you had an input into the itinerary, where would you send the Bills rookies to get a taste of Buffalo, to get a feel for the city, the history of the city, or the culture of the city? Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Phil in South Buffalo to get us going. Phil, good evening. Welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Murphy. How are you doing tonight?
Okay.
Well, outside of going to Rochester, where there's a lot of Bills fans, that'd be more than a day trip. I would have to say, if they're going to go to the Naval Park, bring them to the First Niagara Center and make them go through the Hall of Fame that's in there to let them know about the other Buffalo teams and the history that they have to offer as well. It's not just the Bills.
Yeah, you mean on the ground floor down by the Sabres?
Franchise, but Buffalo is a great historic city when it comes to sports, and the fans are ravenous when it comes to their teams.
You're talking about that display down by the Sabre store, right, in the first floor?
Yep.
Yeah, it's not real big. I mean, it would only be a short visit, but there's some interesting things in there, some interesting artifacts, right?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good idea. And you're right. They're right around the corner at the Naval Park. Here's a call from Jim in Cheektowaga. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
How you doing, Murph?
Okay.
I'd take them down to Bailey and East Elvin and show them St. Gerard's Church and explain to them how they would like to dismantle that church and rebuild it in Norcross, Georgia.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. What do you know about that deal? What do you think that would what would the players get out of that?
Well, I think it would show them how we could preserve a piece of Buffalo, rather than having things just be mothballed and fall apart.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And there certainly are plenty of opportunities for, you know, great architectural gems. I mean, Bulldog mentioned a little bit ago, a half hour ago or so, about, you know, the Darwin Martin outs, which I would include on a stop, even if it's just a drive-by, I think I would include that. And any of the other, you know, architectural treasures of Buffalo, you know, the Guarantee Building downtown, Ellicott Square Building. I mean, there are plenty of places where they could get a sense. And again, I think it used to be, this is just me talking, people in Buffalo might hide from their heritage and the fact that there are so many older buildings around. I don't think it's that way anymore. I think we sort of celebrate those old buildings. I'd take them through the hotel at the Lafayette and show them that wonderful building and the restoration of that wonderful building now. Just to give them a sense of, you know, yeah, we kind of cherish our history here. We don't run and hide from the fact that we've got, you know, 80, 100-year-old buildings. We if we can, we hang on to them and make them even better than they were. Scott in Buffalo. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, John. If you're just going by the city of Buffalo, I guess you'd start like on the west side, show them like, you know, the water over there, like I guess the Niagara Street, the water, the ferry, you know, the foot of ferry and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Food wise, if you're on the west side, you got to stop at, I guess, like the Anchor Bar or Lenova or something like that. North side, you know, show them like Hurdle Avenue, all the shops and the little businesses over there. The south side, I guess. The east side, I guess you can take them over to by the Broadway Market and stuff, although that area needs some major renovation. But if you want to show them a sense of culture, I guess you can show them, you know, how it used to be over there.
Sure.
And what is it called? North Buffalo, you know, just a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, good idea. That's a very good idea. Thanks very much for your call, Scott. You know, the days of... I think these players have changed for the better. The days of Willis McGahee complaining about he can only go to Applebee's, I don't see that in this group. I mean, it's a big, diverse group. there's 90 players here now. There's going to be 53 to 60 players here when they cut down in September. But it seems to me these, and maybe it's a generational thing, the days of, you know, players say, just saying, well, all there is to do is go to Applebee's or to go, you know, sit in my apartment and play video games. I think some of these players on the Bills roster now, I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, the Fred Jacksons and Brian Scotts. I mean, these guys have made this their home and immersed themselves in the community here. And, you know, they're veterans, but they're young guys. I mean, what better way to indoctrinate the rookies than to take them around and show them some of the great places you talked about? Take them on Hurdle Avenue. You know, take them to some of those great restaurants on Hurdle Avenue. Take them to, you know, Schwabble's in West Seneca for beef on wick. I mean, take them to, you could do it just on restaurants alone, and I think the players would like it.
I do know for a fact that Robert Woods, EJ Manuel, Marquise Goodwin, and Kendall Gaskins went bowling last night.
There you go.
Can't get much more Buffalo than that.
You're right. That's a good point. Well, it's the rookie tour. It's coming up Thursday, and it's, you know, about a half day, so they are limited in what they can do. But we'll revisit this topic. You know, where do you think they should go, these Bills players on the rookie tour? And if you can suggest just one extra stop on the tour, let us know what you think. All right, we're going to take a break and come back and talk with Terrell Troop, Bills defensive lineman, making a bid to stay healthy, number one, and win a spot on the roster, number two, the former second-round pick back in 2010 out of Central Florida. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO at One Bills Drive. We are in week two of organized team activity, and a lot of activity for the guy who is in studio with us right now, former second-round pick of the Bills, Terrell Troop. Thanks very much for coming by, Terrell. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Talk about this now going into your fourth year, and even though you lost all of last year, you must feel comfortable and settled and at least know the organization pretty well these days.
Honestly, you would think so, but not really with all the changes. You know, it's kind of like I got to put on a performance for everybody that's new now. So it's back to square one.
Yeah, you're not alone, I would think. Even the guys who've been here for a couple of years probably think there's a new set of eyes watching us. We got to pay attention now.
Right, definitely. You get comfortable when you've been here two or three years with a certain staff, and now it's a new staff. So you have to get used to everything that they do and the way they do things.
Terrell, let's talk about last year for a second. I recall when the team went to camp last year and you had the back issues. It seemed like in camp anyway, you were really struggling trying to stay on the field and stay healthy and almost ready to break out. How did you approach going into last year at training camp?
Going into last year, honestly, I knew I wasn't healthy enough. I wasn't healed enough from my surgery. You know, they just wanted me to go out there and do what I was able to do, and what I was able to do wasn't much. You know, I couldn't even make it to a preseason game.
Yeah.
And a lot of that had to do with the atrophy of my legs and losing a lot of strength in my legs. And, you know, the back was healed, but just from the surgery, I had a lot of, you know, recurring issues with my legs. So.
When was the surgery? When did you have the surgery?
December 2011. Yeah, 2011.
All right, so let me back it up, because maybe this, I going into camp in 2011, and that was coming off the lockout, that's when you were primed and ready to go, right? You went into camp with a full head of steam, ready to go.
Yeah, I was ready to go. I worked my butt off. I did everything I was supposed to do in the offseason, and then unfortunately, I think it was the fourth preseason game of the year, and a freak accident. I honestly don't know how it happened. And, you know, I came out feeling good after the game. But 3 days later, you know, I start feeling real achy and my back started hurting. And I tried to go out to practice and it just wouldn't happen. So, you know, the doctors ask me all the time, do you have any kind of recall of anything that happened in the game? But, you know, when you got that much adrenaline going, you can't feel anything anyway. So, you know, I didn't feel anything the 3 days afterwards.
And what was it, a disc issue in the lower back?
The disc was protruding onto my nerves. So I was feeling it all the way down to my toes. So it was just a constant pain. And, you know, I was able to, once I got going, I was able to block out the pain for most of the season and try to keep playing through it. But it got to the point, I think we were up at the New York Jets, and, you know, I tried to go out and warm up, and it just wasn't happening for me.
So that was 2011. You managed to play six games. Then you went on IR. Then you had the back surgery.
Yeah.
So, and going to camp last year, now we're back to 2012, you knew going in that it just wasn't right. And did they tell you it would take that long to recover from the surgery?
Well, you know, the doctor had performed the surgery a few times, and he told me it could be anywhere between 6 months and a year. You know, he said, hope for the best. Hopefully it would be 6 months, but it just didn't happen that way. 6 months after my surgery, I was still taking pain pills. You know, I was still couldn't sit for 5 minutes. So, you know, it was even a struggle getting from Atlanta back up to Buffalo, having to sit on the plane. I thought I was going to have to lay in the aisle just to make it back up here.
Wow.
So, you know, it just was a time. You know, my body took a little bit longer. Some guys take 6 months, some guys take a year. So
IR all last year for you. How did you spend last year? What did you do?
Working out every day.
Yeah.
You know, spending it with Coach Gamble that used to be here, our strength coach. And, you know, sitting down with Buddy Nix and, you know, the staff before the season started, you know, they told me that they wanted me to be here. And they thought I was a good player. And they didn't think cutting me would be the best thing, you know, for me or for them. You know, they felt like I could play football, so they wanted to give me a chance to get healthy.
They have a second-round pick invested in you, and they also must feel like they saw something from you from your rookie year and from the six games you played in your second year, right?
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely felt like I was getting into a stride going into my second year, and, you know, just a freak accident. You know?
Now, let's bring us up to speed for this year and I guess leading up to this year. When did your back feel good enough so that you could start working out and participating in these workouts?
Actually, last October, you know, but I was obviously on IR
out the year,
for the year. So I started doing field work back in October, hitting sleds, moving around. And, you know, with every day, I just gained more confidence. And that's the biggest thing, gaining confidence after coming off a big surgery like that, you know, falling on the ground and, you know, getting your legs back under you. But now I feel good.
We're talking with Terrell Troop, former Bills second-round draft pick, now in his fourth year out of Central Florida. Let's talk about this OTA, and in particular the OTA practice today, Terrell. You were running around all over the place and made a couple plays. It had to feel pretty good. Was that one of your best practices since you've been back?
Yeah, definitely. You know, with the time off, you know, it comes a lot of rust. So, you know, I have to practice the little things that other guys might take for granted, you know, my footwork, my hand placement, my pad level. So, you know, I've been focusing on all those things. And, you know, Coach today told me just to get out there and play and just move fast. And that's what I did. And I made a few plays.
Was that Coach Weaver I heard a couple times today calling out your name?
Yeah.
And it was all good. I mean, he was pretty pleased with the way you played today.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you get out of these OTAs? I mean, what do you feel like you're getting out of these snaps that you're getting now?
The biggest thing is getting the rust off. Like I said, you know, being out of football for a while, and it's just you have to remember so much. And we're learning a new defense, which is coming along well. You know, I feel like I pick up on defense as well. So it's just, you know, repetitively doing those things, you know, over and over again.
How does this defense change for interior defensive linemen like yourself?
I feel like we move around a lot more. We won't be so vanilla, and that's going to be great for us because, you know, sometimes I feel like we got too vanilla. And now we're going to be moving around. We're going to be making plays. You know, they're preaching, you know, attack, attack, attack. You know, we're one of the strongest parts of our defense is our defensive line. So we need to be able to make plays and get off the ball. So.
Jarrell, do you find yourself playing like a two technique, like a nose tackle type from time to time?
You know what? It's funny because when we started OTAs, the first thing I went back to was two gapping because that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years. And, you know, after the first day, Marone came up to me and, you know, told me you got to get out of that mindset. You know, we'll do a little bit of two gapping, but we want to get off the ball and penetrate and make plays. So.
Okay. And then do you think that's something that suits your game?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I can do both of them. I can get off the ball. I got a quick first step so I can get off the ball and get in the backfield.
What do you think of this new coaching staff, especially on the defensive side of the ball? What's their philosophy? What's their plan, do you think?
The biggest thing is, you know, they're not going to accept, you know, the same old stuff, you know, and that's going to be big for us. And this new defense, I really like the new defense. We got a lot of defensive schemes and putting a lot of guys in different positions to make plays. But the biggest thing is, like I said, is they're not going to accept the same old, same old.
Terrell, you look at the guys around you and the fact that you didn't play last year and only got in six games a year before. I mean, the beat goes on. They've added people. They've added defensive linemen. They've got some pretty good interior guys already with Kyle and Marcel Darius. What's your role, do you think, in that group inside or on that defensive line in general?
Honestly, I just look at my role as to make anybody better that I can, you know, give competition and push anybody that I can. And, you know, the biggest thing is if somebody go down, somebody else got to step in and take the place and play at a high level too. So, you know, I'm still learning from Kyle every day. You know, Kyle is one of them great players that knows a lot. So you can pull anything from him. You definitely do. And Marcel just has natural talent. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a pretty talented group overall, isn't it? And maybe more talented than they showed last year. You were talking about how vanilla things were last year.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully, you know, we're able to make a lot more plays with the guys that we have in our room. We got some great guys in our room.
Terrell, from a personal standpoint, again, as you go into your fourth year, losing all of last year, six games a year before, how much do you feel you have to prove, you know, as a former second-round pick? And people, you feel like people are looking at you like, come on, it's time now.
You know, I get so much ridicule and so much of that, you know, I just try to honestly block it out and play football. You know,
do you get that from?
I get that from everywhere. I just get that from walking down the street, you know. So,
come on, really?
Yeah, so, you know, it is what it is. You know, the fans here respect a lot. And, you know, unfortunately, I can't do anything about my injury or getting hurt. So I just have to block things like that out. You know, the coaching staff know who I am and what I can do. And, you know, I feel very comfortable with those guys. So, you know, that's all I can do is, you know, play for them.
The coaching staff, and I know based on going into camp a couple of years ago, 2011, the scouting staff holds you in pretty high regard. I mean, they spent a second-round pick on you. They saw a lot of things going into your second year. Yeah. They expect a lot from you, too, I would think.
Yeah,
right?
They definitely do, and I definitely feel like I can add to this team. I just have to stay healthy and hopefully no more freak accidents, nothing crazy like that, and I can get through a full season. So
you guys are about midway through the OTAs, and then there's a one-week mini camp in the middle of June. Do you count the days or do you look forward to these practice days? Are you looking forward to ending it or do you like what you do?
Me, honestly, I look forward to the days. You know, I was ready to go back in January. So, you know, I look forward to every day getting to go out there and hit somebody because I missed the whole year. You know, you take for granted what you're doing every day. But now that I had a chance to actually sit out and see everybody and not be a part of the team and now I get to be back with my teammates, it's just a joy just to run out on the field.
Good luck to you. Thanks for doing
this. Thank you. No problem.
Terrell Troop, Bills defensive lineman, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And our thanks to Terrell Troop for joining us in studio, the defensive lineman. Guess he's a defensive tackle, but as he pointed out, he's moving him around a little bit. They seem to be moving all of them around. The question came up on the radio show last night about, you know, who's playing defensive end? Who's playing defensive tackle these days for the Bills? And even if you look at a roster, you know, obviously Alan Branch is playing some defensive tackle. Kyle Williams, who hasn't done much of anything with his recovery from the foot injury. Marcel Darius. Terrell Troop is a defensive tackle. Jerron Gilbert gets a lot of snaps in these OTAs because of the injuries to people like Kyle Williams and the voluntary absence of Marcel Darius. So those are the defensive tackles, but they're moving them around. I mean, Carrington played a little inside today and made a few plays on the run today as well. So it's kind of fun to watch, and it's going to be real fun to watch in training camp and then into the preseason games. If you need more information about the Bills and today's OTAs, you can always check out BuffaloBills.com. Bills Roundup is up. Chris Brown and I with a video feature, some of the highlights from today, some sound from Mike Patton, some sound from Stevie Johnson. It's all at BuffaloBills.com, Bills Roundup. As usual, if you miss portions of our show, go to BuffaloBills.com/John Murphy Show, and you can also download the mobile Bills app there at BuffaloBills.com. Press conferences from today, the coordinators, interviews, all the info you need at BuffaloBills.com. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk about pro football research. Ken Crippen has written a book, by the way, about the old All-America Football Conference, Buffalo Bills, but he is also in charge of the Pro Football Researchers Association, and Ken Crippen and his group have come up with a Hall of Very Good in answer to the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Guys who just might not be good enough to be in the Hall of Fame, but good enough to be in the Hall of Very Good. We'll talk with Ken Crippen about that. We'll talk about the Super Bowl and the awarding of Super Bowls 50 and 51 today. 50 goes to San Francisco in their new stadium, Levi Stadium. We'll talk with the play-by-play voice of the Niners, Ted Robinson, next hour. And Super Bowl 51 goes to Houston, Texas. We'll talk with John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, who covers the Houston Texans and the NFL. That's all coming up next hour. We were talking earlier on this hour about the Bills rookie tour coming up Thursday with the stops they have planned. A half-day rookie tour, about a 5 or 6 hour bus tour of Western New York, starts here at the stadium. They go to the Naval Park. They go to New Era Camp on Delaware Avenue in downtown Buffalo. They go to the Buffalo Zoo, then they go to Niagara Falls. And the question was out there, where would you tell them, if you could make one more stop for that group of 21 to 24-year-old males, where would you think they could stop? One more stop for them to get a sense of Buffalo, what Buffalo's all about, to get a good feel for Buffalo. Let us know what you think. Add to their itinerary on the Buffalo Bills rookie tour. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. We've had my suggestion was Jefferson and Best, the old site of War Memorial Stadium. Others have said, you know, maybe they should go to, well, somebody said tour of some of the great restaurants along Hurdle Avenue. I think that's a very good suggestion. But where would you send them if you could add one item to that rookie tour itinerary? 803-0550, the number to call. Here is Justine in Buffalo. Hi, Justine. Welcome to the show.
I would take the rookies to the Botanical Gardens.
Really? Why would you take them there, Justine?
They can walk. It's a nice little place to walk around and learn about the various types of plants that come from all over the world.
Okay. And do you think these 21 to 25-year-old young men, how long you I know the Botanical Gardens is a great place, but how long do you think that would hold their attention, I guess?
Well, they could go through quickly.
Yeah, they probably would. But it's a good idea. It's a beautiful place. And, you know, the other thing I would do, and I was part of the crew from the Buffalo Bills staff who was on the big cleanup day at Delaware Park, and just walking around Delaware Park and thinking about that park and you know, Cass Park in South Buffalo, the Botanical Gardens down there in the South Park area. The city of Buffalo park system, the Olmsted Parks, are just incredible. I mean, just amazing parks in Buffalo and all over Western New York. But Buffalo in particular, I would maybe make a stop, and especially anyone who's had exposure to Central Park in New York, you take them a walk or a drive around Delaware Park in Buffalo and say, does this remind anybody of anything like Central Park in New York? I mean, it's pretty amazing. It's very amazing. Here is Woody in Rochester. Hi, Woody. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, good talking to you. Good topic today. Thanks. I thought it would be an idea to take them to the there's an Underground Railroad Museum in Buffalo area. I'm not sure exactly the location of it, but I'm pretty sure there's a few African-American players and but for all the players, would be something interesting for them to understand Rochester's history in the Underground Railroad movement. I mean, Buffalo's history, excuse me.
Yeah, I wonder where that is. I've heard of that. I don't know where that is. It'd probably be like basements places, right? They were like halfway houses, for lack of a better term, for the escaped and freed slaves who were trying to make their way to Canada, right? That's why they have the Underground Railroad sites and maybe in the museum here in Buffalo, right?
Yeah, there is. I'm driving. I was trying to look it up when I stopped on my iPad. I was hoping I would have a little longer time.
Don't have
I would have been able to tell you exactly.
Don't have an accident. Don't have an accident, Woody. That's a good idea. And I think you're right. It might be something that would resonate with the African-American players on the roster. And I think you're on the right track. I think I was talking about the architecture earlier. Anything you could do to give these young guys a sense of the history of the place. I mean, you know what just occurred to me? The Theodore Roosevelt inaugural site. Historical site on Delaware Avenue. I mean, talk about history, and it's, you know, 100-plus years ago now, but to show them, yeah, this is where a president took the oath of office, and this is why it went down this way. Another president was assassinated right over here at Delaware Park. I mean, I think that resonates with me, and I think any interested, curious young man who's, you know, trying to make a new home here in Buffalo, I think that might resonate with them. I think that would be a stop I would make. Here's Dave calling from Central New York. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, my suggestion is to take them right to City Hall. Have them look at the beautiful building that City Hall is and go up to the observation floor. let them walk around the outside. You see the lake.
Yeah.
You see the river, the Peace Bridge, the whole city of Buffalo.
Yeah, give them a map and say, here's what you're looking at. I like that idea, especially with all of the water surrounding the city. I like that idea a lot. Dave, thanks very much for your call. All right, we're going to take a break, and then when we return, we're going to talk with Ken Crippen of the Pro Football Researchers Association about not the Hall of Fame, but the Hall of Very Good. Ken Crippen joins us next hour, and we'll also talk about Super Bowls 50 and 51 going to San Francisco and Houston. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's going to the house. He's doing it again. My man. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Man, you should hang out. You should go fishing again.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
I don't know what we're yelling about.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
It is hour two of the John Murphy Show here until 9 o'clock tonight. Coming up later this hour, we'll talk about the awarding of the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50 to San Francisco. We'll talk with Ted Robinson, the voice of the Niners, and Super Bowl 51 to Houston, Texas. We'll talk with John McClain, a fine writer from the Houston Chronicle, about that. It's funny, on this show, when you're lining up guests and talking to guests, how one thing often leads to another. Last week, we chatted with Bill Berge, the Western New York native who covers the Philadelphia Eagles. He's part of the pregame and postgame radio coverage of Eagles Radio in Philadelphia, and came across an article listing him as in the Hall of Very Good, not the Hall of Fame, not the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but the Hall of Very Good. Well, that's put together by the Professional Football Resources Association, and we've got the executive director of the PFRA on the line with us live right now from the Philadelphia area, Ken Crippen. Ken, thanks very much for coming on the air. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
You have roots here in Western New York, right? You lived here for a while.
Yes, I did. I was actually born in Lackawanna and lived in Grand Island for about 6 years before moving down to Philadelphia.
Well, we're happy you're able to join us tonight. You know, when I saw the one thing about when I was reading about Berge being in the Hall of Very Good, it reminded me of my now late great pal, Larry Felser, who just passed away about two or three weeks ago, almost a month ago now. And when we did radio shows with Larry, and when people would call up with suggestions for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Larry always said, you know, there's a reason it's called the Hall of Fame and not the Hall of Very Good. I think he was on the same way of thinking that you are, right? I mean, there's a difference between the Hall of Fame and the Hall of Very Good, right?
Exactly. I mean, essentially what we want to do is just honor players who have had excellent careers but are not in the Hall of Fame. And it's not really trying to replace the Hall of Fame or as a criticism to the Hall of Fame. It's mainly just making sure that players who have had excellent careers are noted for their careers.
How long is the PFRA put together the Hall of Very Good? How many classes have you elected?
We started in 2003, and right now we have 94 inductees. And actually, nine of the inductees have been inducted into the Hall of Fame after they're inducted into our Hall of Very Good.
And are they immediately expelled from the Hall of Very Good once they get into Canton?
No, we just put an asterisk on there saying that they've been inducted into the Hall of Fame after their induction in the Hall of Very Good.
I can't recall anybody refusing induction to the Hall of Fame in Canton because they were in the Hall of Very Good. That would not happen.
I can't remember that either.
That would not happen. Before we get deeper into this, Ken, tell me about the Professional Football Researchers Association. What is your group all about?
We were formed in 1979 as a nonprofit educational organization dedicated to pro football history. And really our goal is to educate people on the history of the game and its players. And right now we have almost 400 members in 9 countries. And we've published a magazine steadily since our inception. And right now we probably have over 1,400 articles that were published on the history of the game and its players.
And who are your members? Are they fans? Are they academics? Are they, you know, sports writers? Who constitutes your membership?
Essentially all of the above. It's basically anybody who has a love of the history of the game. So whether it's fans, whether it's writers, whether it's researchers, statisticians, we do have people that are members of the media, including members of the Hall of Fame Selection Committee that are members and actually do vote in our Hall of Very Good.
And are there any qualifications for being a member of the Pro Football Researchers Association? Do you have to do research?
you don't have to do research. You don't have to write any articles. You don't have to have any football background at all. You just basically have to have a love of the history of the game. Just go to our website, and you can sign up either through PayPal or sending us a check with a membership form, and that's all it takes, and you get a subscription to our magazine, 6 issues a year.
And the magazine is called The Coffin Corner, right?
That is correct.
And do you print that, or is that an online magazine?
We print it, but then we also have a PDF online for people to download if they're members of the organization.
And before we go much further, right now, give us the address for the website so the people who are interested can reach you.
It's profootballresearchers.org.
Okay, and we'll get back to that in a moment or two. Now, back to the Hall of Very Good. You are right now in the midst of balloting for the class of 2013 for the Hall of Very Good. Tell us about the nominees for the class of 2013, Ken.
Well, there are 20 names on there, and actually three of them have connections to Buffalo. Cookie Gilchrist and Daryl LaMonica are obviously familiar names to Bills fans. Also, Lamar Parrish, who really played, I think, 7 games or so in the 1982 season for the Bills. But we do have a total of 20 names. Some of the more notable ones are people like Roban Gabriel, Charlie Hennigan, Dwayne Putnam, Harvey Martin, Tony Latone, George Koontz, Bob Kuchenberg.
How many are elected in a typical class? How many will you wind up with as enshrinees this year?
It's going to be anywhere between 3 and 10. We have a maximum of 10 each year. So as long as they get 75% of the vote from our membership, then they will be inducted.
You know, Ken, I referenced my late friend Larry Felser earlier. I know that if he had a vote in your group, he would immediately cast one of his ballots for, this might surprise you, by the way, Bob Kuchenberg. I know he had a great deal of regard for the longtime Miami Dolphins guard. Is he maybe the strongest or one of the strongest candidates you have in this year's class?
I would say he's probably definitely up there, along with Cookie Gilchrist and Roman Gabriel, Gail Gillingham. I mean, a lot of those players, my guess, would be inducted this year.
You know, quarterbacks obviously suck up most of the oxygen, get all of the attention. But to have Roman Gabriel not in the – I would imagine if you took 10 pretty avid pro football fans and polled them, you know, guys who knew a little bit about the history of the game, and asked them if Roman Gabriel had been enshrined in Canton at the Pro Football Hall of Fame – I would say at least half of them would probably say yes. I have to confess I'm a bit surprised that he's not in Canton, Ohio. What about you, Ken?
I'm a little surprised as well. I mean, I think he's got a lot of qualifications to definitely be in the discussion. But as of right now, I don't even see him getting into the final 15 of the seniors committee, let alone into the final two for voting from the full committee.
And another quarterback who, by virtue of the position and maybe by virtue of the way he played, Daryl LaMonica, who really had his best years with the Oakland Raiders, he's a guy who I would think would merit consideration certainly for your group, but even for the voters in Canton, no?
Well, he is one of the finalists this year in our group. But as far as Canton, maybe they're thinking that he just didn't play long enough. Because I know he backed up Kemp for a little while, and then he didn't become a starter really until he got to Oakland. So more of a shorter career for them to analyze, so that's probably why he hasn't been considered for them.
And then the case of Cookie Gilchrist, who, you know, people kind of struggle to find a place for him in the annals of pro football history. He was almost like he was so good and so spectacular, and his career was so brief that people have a hard time figuring out what to do with Cookie Gilchrist, the late Cookie Gilchrist now, don't they?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, that's probably why he's really not coming up for induction in Canton. But, you know, with us being with the Hall of Very Good, we can analyze players with a shorter career. So that's why he's a finalist this year for us.
One more name on your list of finalists this year. And this probably says more about me and my generation than anything else. But when I see the name Mike Curtis, the linebacker for Baltimore, I know he was a fine player, but most people of my age can't forget about him slugging a fan who happened to wander out on the field. Do most people think that about Mike Curtis?
With the fact that he played a while ago, a lot of people may not be thinking that. but, I mean, I would definitely say that that is something that definitely comes to people's minds when they hear his name.
Yeah, like I said, I just kind of exposed myself as a shallow fan. We're talking with Ken Crippen. He's executive director of the Professional Football Researchers Association. We're talking about the Hall of Very Good. The voting is on now. And when will you announce your class of 2013, Ken?
The voting ends May 31st, so probably within a few days after that, we'll be sending out the press release with the class of 2013.
And as you said, anywhere from 3 to 10 members in this year's class, right?
That's correct.
I want to ask you about some of the guys who are already in your Hall of Very Good, even with Bills ties, in particular Jack Kemp, who went in just last year, right, the former Bills quarterback.
That's correct. Jack Kemp and Swede Youngstrom both made it in last year. Swede Youngstrom was probably the best offensive lineman in the 1920s for the Buffalo team. And some people consider him the best offensive lineman within the league, at least one of them. So he's definitely somebody that not a lot of people have heard of because he played so long ago, but he definitely deserves recognition.
How do you and your members analyze careers like that, Ken? Guys who played, like you mentioned, Swede Youngstrom played 1920 through 1927, and nobody is around now who saw him play. So how do you have that discussion? How do you guys know that he was among the best offensive linemen of his era?
Usually newspaper accounts. A lot of the newspapers back then really had detailed accounts of every game. A lot of times they'd even get down to, you know, all of the plays that were played within the game, a complete play-by-play. So you really have a way of analyzing how good these players were back then if you really really read the newspaper reports.
I think Bills fans would be happy to know that a couple of great names from the Bills championship teams, the AFL championship teams, are enshrined in your Hall of Very Good. Coach Lou Saban and defensive lineman Tom Sestak. Neither one of them probably, you know, merited real strong consideration for the Hall of Fame in Canton, but certainly they belong in the Hall of Very Good, right?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes you will hear Sestak's name come up, but I'm not sure if he really played long enough for a lot of the selectors to really seriously consider him. But people who really know the game and really watch the AFL will definitely bring up Sestak's name as one of the best defensive tackles of his era.
And there does not appear in your Hall of Very Good to be any bias against the old American Football League. In fact, you've got a number of AFL players. We've talked about several of them tonight.
Yeah, there's absolutely no bias whatsoever, whether they played in the AFL, whether they played in the All-America Football Conference, whether they played in the AFL of 1926, it really doesn't matter to us.
Canadian football, any other professional leagues included in your Hall of Very Good?
No, nothing in the Canadian League. You may have somebody, if they were in the USFL or WFL, if they also played in the NFL. But usually it's just NFL, AFL, All-America Football Conference is usually the considerations for Hall of Very Good.
Ken Crippen, our guest, executive director of the Professional Football Researchers Association, talking about the Hall of Very Good. Ken, you're also an author, and you wrote a book a couple of years ago, The Original Buffalo Bills, A History of the All-American Football Conference Team. I know most of our listeners, I would assume many of them, know that there was a Buffalo Bills team in the old All-America Football Conference in the late 1940s, a very strong franchise in that league, both on the field and in the box office back then, weren't they?
Absolutely. There was a lot of support for Buffalo back during the All-America Football Conference days, and I think that was one of the reasons why Ralph Wilson really wanted to come to Buffalo with his team, is because he saw the fan support for the team of the All-America Football Conference and said that, yeah, we definitely have a strong town here that really loves their game.
What kind of crowds were they drawing? I think it was called Civic Stadium. Was it War Memorial or Civic Stadium over there back then?
It was Civic Stadium at the time.
And what kind of crowds did they draw?
They had pretty decent amounts. I mean, you would have, you know, at that time, bringing in 38,000-40,000 was exceptional. And they had some of the best attendance within the All-America Football Conference.
40,000 folks back in the late 40s. That's good.
Yeah.
Now, the league, the All-American Football Conference, of course, was absorbed, I guess, merged with the National Football League after, what, 1949? And tell us the story how that went down and how the Buffalo Bills at that time were bypassed.
There's several reasons why the Bills were bypassed with that. When the league folded after the 1949 season, three teams were brought in, Baltimore Colts, the Cleveland Browns, and the San Francisco 49ers. Now, the Colts that are currently in the league are not the same Colts that were in the All-America Football Conference, but there's a kind of a loose definition as far as how those teams transferred through. But as far as Buffalo is concerned, there are a couple of things that were working against them. One was the owner, Jim Brule, of the Bills. He no longer wanted to be an owner, so he basically gave up on the team. But a civic group came together and was able to raise capital for it, sell stock, and also sell season tickets to show that there was definitely support within the Buffalo area for the team. However, the NFL really wanted a single person owning a team in order to make decisions at league meetings. So because they didn't have a specific owner, they weren't able to get in. Also, the failure of the team within the 20s and within the early 40s of being able to sustain things financially really worked against them, because the NFL wants to make sure that they have teams that are financially sound and that the city is going to really be able to support them. And when Jim Brewer was saying that he lost money every year while he was in the AFC, and then the teams in the 40s, teams in the 20s were struggling to stay afloat, that also worked against them. So those were pretty much the two main things, two main reasons why Buffalo did not get into the NFL.
Didn't Jim Brewer cut a side deal with somebody in the NFL for part ownership of a team, too?
The Cleveland Browns. He actually became a part owner of the Cleveland Browns and sold some of his players to Cleveland as part of that deal.
Well, what brought you to those Buffalo Bills, the All-America Football Conference Bills, as the topic of a book, Kim? What got you interested in that?
I always loved the history of pro football in Western New York. I mean, I'm a Bills fan since, you know, the very beginning, and as I was delving into the history, I was really drawn to the team of the 1940s. Then I started talking to some of the players from that era, and I've actually contacted all of the surviving members of that team, and it's something that really drew me. So I wanted to get this book out there in order to tell the story of these players and of that team so that nobody really forgets that there was a Buffalo Bills team back in the 1940s.
The fact that the current franchise now, you know, in the 21st century, 2013, has the exact same nickname, a nickname that, you know, some might say doesn't make a whole lot of sense, actually. What does that say about the affection and the regard that Western New Yorkers had for that team? And what else has, you know, been left over from the All-America Football Conference team that sort of applies to the Bills or their fan base now, Ken?
I would say that really the way that the Buffalo community supported the AAFC team is really, you know, one of the things that connects it to the current team, is because it's really part of the fabric of the community. I mean, the city of Buffalo loves their team. Regardless of how they're doing, they're always going to love the team. They're always going to support the team. And that was something that really came out of the AAFC days, is that strong support.
Well, it's a good book, I'm sure, and I've got to make sure I can get a look at it sometime again. It's the original Buffalo Bills, a history of the All-America Football Conference team. And you also are the executive director of the Professional Football Researchers Association. Give us the website again, if you would, if anybody's interested in looking into this a little deeper.
It's profootballresearchers.org.
Okay. And information there about the Hall of Very Good, and we look forward to that announcement coming up, next week, maybe the next 10 days or so, on this year's class for the Hall of Very Good.
Exactly.
Ken, thank you very much for being on the air with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Ken Crippen is the executive director of the Professional Football Researchers Association, and as he said, you can check out their website for more information, profootballresearchers.org. Information on the Hall of Very Good, information about their magazine, The Coffin Corner. Maybe you even want to sign up and be part of their group, the Professional Football Researchers Association. The Super Bowl being awarded to San Francisco and Houston. We'll talk about that when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The announcement came in Boston today, the Super Bowl announcement, Super Bowl 50 and 51. Super Bowl 50 goes to San Francisco Bay Area. Super Bowl 51, January 2017, goes to Houston, Texas, the third Super Bowl to be played in Houston. On the line with us, the longtime sports writer, covers the Texans and the NFL for the Houston Chronicle, John McClain, on the line with us from the NFL meetings in Boston. John, I know, busy day for you, busy night. Thanks for coming on with us.
It's my pleasure, John. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, was this expected after the Miami meltdown a couple of weeks ago when they didn't put the stadium issue on the ballot?
It was. Miami would have been favored with the $350 million in improvements to Sun Life Stadium, but when the legislature refused to even allow a referendum, and they had campaigned saying that if we don't get this money, we have no prayer, and they were right. They had no prayer. Houston had a strong bid, worth it. Excess of $35 million, but it would have been a lot closer, I think, if Miami had been appropriated that money.
You know, I was watching some of the coverage on NFL Network today, John, and watching Bob McNair, the Texans owner's response, and it occurred to me, most owners probably hold Bob McNair in pretty high regard. I got thinking, he's like almost the model owner in the NFL these days, isn't he?
He's in. Bob is very low key. He goes to practice. He wants to know what's going on, but he doesn't tell Coach Gary Kubiak or General Manager Rick Smith what to do. One of the reasons I like Bob McNair is he's very cooperative, returns calls. He's the most genuine billionaire I've ever met, and he's a big, gives away a lot of money in Houston, and people respect him. And he's built his organization the right way. They think they're built to last. They want to be like, you know, the Patriots and the Ravens and the Packers and those organizations that seem to be good year in and year out.
John, I wonder, Reliance Stadium with the retractable roof, I've been there a couple of times with the Bills and I've never seen it open. There's no way that they would open that for a Super Bowl, is there?
It depends on the weather. We can have in February, we could have 65 degrees and bright sunshine and everybody's out playing golf, or we could have 10 or 15 degrees. That's rare, but I've seen it. But the good thing about having a retractable roof is you do not have to worry about the weather. In Miami, two Super Bowls ago, when Indianapolis beat Chicago, Peyton Manning won that game in a monsoon just with torrential downpour for the fans. So that's something. One thing they don't have to worry about in Houston.
You know, we're just a couple of years removed from the Dallas Super Bowl, and there were some bad weather experiences there. I know Houston is not Dallas, and it's far from Dallas, but you can get ice storms down there in that time of the year, can't you?
Houston does. We generally don't. If there's any kind of ice in North Houston, they shut down the whole city, which is amazing to me considering so many people are from the north. But in Dallas, they had ticket snafus at the stadium, which caused the Cowboys a lot of embarrassment, the league a lot of embarrassment, and in the Metroplex host committee a lot of embarrassment as well. They'll get another one because they can make the most money of any stadium, but I thought it was interesting that Houston was a finalist and not Dallas, considering you put another 30,000 fans in Jerry World.
Yeah. Hey, John, the last time the Super Bowl was in Houston, Super Bowl 38, the Patriots beat Carolina, but really the one thing people most remember is the halftime show with Janet Jackson. Will she be on the halftime show again this year, do you think?
Doug, for some reason, I do not think she or Justin Timberlake will be there. It's interesting because we had a streaker, maybe the first in history, but nobody paid any attention to him because of the wardrobe malfunction.
I guess that worked out for everybody's benefit. One more question, and this is not Super Bowl related, John, but I know you covered the Texans for all these years. You probably followed over the last week Mario Williams' travails up here in Buffalo with some text messages that his ex-fiance's attorney leaked to the media. Any thoughts on that and maybe how that's playing out in the Houston area about Mario Williams? And what do you think does it have any effect at all on his on-field performance?
It's a huge story in Houston, just as it is in Buffalo. You know, he spent 5 seasons with us. He spent 1 there. And it's a subject, as you can imagine, as it is there on talk shows. And number one, Mario's got enough money. He should just written it off, chalked it up to experience, and no more the next time he gets engaged, because he's opened a Pandora's box, and her attorney is just, he can't wait to do things that are going to make Mario look bad, including those texts about suicide. Mario Williams did something last week, and I hope it got attention up there. The story was done in Houston, but without a lot of fanfare because of the other. Mario had studied to become a deputy sheriff, and he did. He's an official deputy sheriff. He's given police cars 2 years in a row to the police department, the sheriff's department. So he's done a lot of good with his money. You know, you feel bad. He's in a bad relationship. Her attorney says that he broke up with her a bunch of times, including the last time. Obviously, it's a tumultuous relationship. He should just, you know, say, keep it. You know, learn from it. Don't drag it out and let those attorneys get in court where they can jack up their prices and get a lot of publicity for them.
Yeah, you're right. John, thanks very much for being on the air with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, John. Anytime. Thank you.
John McClain covers the Texans and the NFL for the Houston Chronicle, joining us from Boston, where NFL owners met today and decided to approve two Super Bowls. The Houston gets Super Bowl 51 in January of 2017. And so they're 4 years ahead now. They're working 4 years ahead. The Super Bowl at the end of this coming season is in East Rutherford, New Jersey, MetLife Stadium, January of 2014. That will be Super Bowl 48. That's coming up in MetLife Stadium this coming February, actually. The Super Bowl after that, 2015 January, Super Bowl 49 in Glendale, Arizona, University of Phoenix Stadium there. And then Super Bowl 50 in 2016, February of 2016, the 49ers' new stadium in Santa Clara, California. And then, as John McClain just talked about, the following Super Bowl 51 in Houston, 2017, February. Super Bowl 50, though, the 50th anniversary of the Super Bowl in the new Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. On the line with us now, the play-by-play voice of the San Francisco 49ers, Ted Robinson. Ted, thanks very much for coming on the air with us. We appreciate it.
Well, nice to be with you, John. It's well, it is a day of pride for, quite frankly, it's all of Northern California that wins with the announcement today. It, you know, San Francisco gets the head billing for obvious reasons, but it's really a win for the entire region.
Hey, Ted, is it kind of a quid pro quo? If you build a new stadium, then it's understood that you're going to be in the rotation, you know, for a Super Bowl. Is that, was that at play here, do you think, for San Francisco?
Well, I don't know about, I don't know, John, if it's strictly building a new stadium. Look, they played a game here once upon a time. It's clear that this is an attractive area for, you know, for the league to bring their owners, their sponsors, for fans to travel to. And the, what was holding this area back over 25 years was a facility. And it's also nice to come to California. I mean, you know, sadly, we have a real problem in California with stadiums, and that's been fixed now with Levi's Stadium being done. And John, when you stop and think, 14 months ago, that was a flat piece of land. The first shovel went in the ground 14 months ago, and now a Super Bowl has been granted. It's an extraordinary track, really.
Hey, Ted, give us a sense of the geography. Where is the stadium in Santa Clara in relation to San Francisco? What are we talking about drive time and distance there?
So it's the Santa Clara Stadium is built right next door to the 49ers facility. It's where the team headquarters have been for 24 years. And if you look at a map, it's actually right next to the city of San Jose. The new stadium is going to be about a five-minute drive from the San Jose airport. It's about 45 to 50 minutes from downtown San Francisco, about a half an hour's drive from San Francisco airport. So, yeah, I mean, in a Monday through Friday situation, it could be a tough drive. This game's going to be on a Sunday, and there'll be dedicated lanes, et cetera. So the travel to the game, even from San Francisco, should not be a real problem.
What about the Super Bowl events, the week leading up to the Super Bowl? Where will all that take place, Ted?
Well, I think it's going to be spread, and you heard as part of the presentation, there's going to be golf in Pebble Beach, which is an hour and a half south, wine tasting in Napa, which is an hour and a half north. That's how this thing is going to spread out. But the actual football, because of facilities, the football is going to be closer to the stadium. They're going to have to use Stanford and probably the 49ers facility in Santa Clara as the practice places for the two teams. So a lot of the football, I assume, is going to take place closer to the stadium. A lot of the parties and you know, the national sponsors that come in are going to use San Francisco for the obvious reason.
And, of course, the stadium has a name now, Levi's Stadium, as of the last couple of weeks. And there's a vision for the stadium when it comes to technology and enhancing the fan experience, Ted. Can you talk about that a little bit?
And Jed York was very prominent on that today, for those who might have heard the 49ers CEO speak. But that's been, look, what the 49ers did today in their bid was emphasize philanthropy and giving back 25% of revenues raised. And that's something that clearly played to what the NFL is interested in. The head of the San Francisco committee is one of San Francisco's leading philanthropists. Now, second point is the stadium is being built with the intent of being the greenest facility in the NFL and the most technologically advanced. The 49ers have hired some of the greatest brain power from Facebook to engineer software and bandwidth so that every smartphone and tablet user that comes into that stadium is going to be able to access the information they want. As we all know, any of us who goes to a game today, I go to college games on Saturdays and I can't use my cell phone at a game.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to accept the bandwidth. Well, the 49ers have taken it on as a challenge and given it to several executives. It is their mission to ensure that when you go to a game at Levi's Stadium, you're going to be able to watch video on your smartphone.
And I heard the commissioner talk about that today and heard him talk about expanding that to every stadium in the NFL, which I think is the wave of the future, Ted, although it makes me worry about the future for play-by-play guys like you and me sometimes.
Well, you know, John, our calls live on forever.
Yeah,
you
that's
know.
Right. Yeah.
In the moment, everybody's watching TV or watching their device, but the minute the game is over, John, you know this, it's the radio calls. Thank goodness for us.
Yeah.
That keep the history of our franchises alive.
Yeah, I was at the last Super Bowl in Northern California in 1985, the Dolphins and the 49ers at Stanford Stadium. It was a classic old college stadium, and it was the type of place where you can't even imagine a Super Bowl being played these days, right?
Yeah, and actually, I live, John, about 3 miles from that stadium to this day, and I was in the 49ers broadcast booth for that game, and I laugh about all of the concerns about traffic getting to the new stadium because the Stanford Stadium seated more people. It's tucked into a residential area. It's several miles off any freeway, and it worked. Everybody got to the game fine.
Sure.
Everybody got out of the game fine. So where the 49ers stadium is being built has much greater access than Candlestick, has much more access to train transportation. And so I don't believe any of this will be a significant issue for the Super Bowl.
Ted, we appreciate you coming on with us tonight. When my producer suggested we call you, I said, there's no way he'll do that. He's going to be in Paris by now. Aren't you supposed to be in Paris?
I'm leaving Friday.
All right. Good luck with that. It's, what, 2 weeks with the French Open for you, right?
John, 3 weeks on somebody else's credit card. You kidding me? I'm never quitting that job.
I don't blame you, Ted. Thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time tonight. Have a great trip to Paris. We hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Ted Robinson, the play-by-play voice of the Niners. He's also the voice on NBC and the Tennis Channel of French Open coverage. As he said, he's leaving Friday. I believe their coverage starts on Sunday. Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, the home of the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50 in February of 2016. Our thanks to Ted. Our thanks to John McClain of Houston for joining us tonight as we talk about Super Bowls in the future. We'll come back. We'll open up phone lines and revisit our original topic, which we were talking about tonight, the Bills rookie tour. Where would you include, what would you include on the Bills rookie tour? Where should they go when they hit the bus on Thursday? What should they look at when they want to get a taste of what Buffalo's all about? Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can always follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Couple of minutes left and time for your phone calls, 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or you can send in a tweet on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We were talking earlier about what would you add to the Bills rookie itinerary on Thursday. A couple of suggestions, James Rizzone tweets in, Anchor Bar or Duff's, Albright Knox. They probably found the wings by now, don't you think, those rookies who've been around for a couple of weeks? He also tweets in, Darien Lake. Interesting. Corning Glass Museum. Interesting. An interesting tweet from Ernie Pyle, too, who says, what would be of interest are full interviews with the Bills' new defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator about what we can expect to see this season. Ernie, this is the place for you. Mike Patton going to be with us Thursday night for an extended interview around 8 o'clock on Thursday night. It's on the schedule, and we'll be talking with him. Mike Patton coming up Thursday night. Ernie, thanks for the suggestion. Here's a call from Tim in West Seneca. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
John, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask you about, you had Terrell Troop on.
Yes, sir.
And I had called the other night about the receivers, and now I really am focusing on the defensive line. From Terrell Troop to Alex Carrington, we heard about Alan Branch, and we know about Kyle Williams and Marcel Darius. And what I would love to have you talk a little bit more about, maybe even take a whole hour segment of your show, is bring the whole group of seven or eight potential defensive linemen in this new system and talk about them and really digest what they have going on, from Terrell Troop, a second-round pick, to Alex Carrington being a project third-round pick who could grow and potentially be something. We have a ton of talent there, and I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Yeah, I mean, we try to work that through. That's certainly something we can address with Mike Patton on Thursday. I mean, we're in the early stage of this OTA. We're halfway through the OTAs, and following the OTAs in mid-June, there's a three-day mandatory minicamp, and then, of course, training camp in late July. So the picture, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is the picture is just starting to take shape right now. You mentioned all the names, the interior defensive line types, Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius, Carrington. I had a chance to talk with him today. He's going to probably play on the inside on that defensive line. Terrell Troop, who you heard earlier on the show, he's a candidate there. Alan Branch, who they brought in, a free agent signing. Of that group of five, I'm guessing four of them will probably make the roster, and guys like Carrington in particular, maybe Troop to a lesser extent, who can be a little more versatile, I think would have a pretty good shot of sticking around. But there are others, you know, Jerron Gilbert, a guy who got a little bit of playing time over the last year or so here. Again, it's all beginning to take shape, and it's all starting gradually to crystallize who's going to play where. And that's really what the biggest benefit to me is to watch the OTAs is trying to figure out this defense. We're going to talk with Petten about it when he joins us Thursday night. Andrew from Northern California. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
How are you?
Great.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. Love the show. The quick question I have was about the receivers. I've been racking my brain just because I love the young talent and the Rick Rogers coming in and with everyone. How many receivers do you see us taking into the season? And who do you think is kind of on that list and maybe being cut, like a Brad Smith? I'm kind of worried about him. But with all this young talent, I just want to hear some of your feedback on that.
Okay, good question. Again, early in the offseason, Andrew. Thanks for listening all the way from Northern California. Typically, a team will keep five or six, and a lot of this may have to do with who's going to get the return work. But, I mean, Stevie, solid. Woods, solid. You would think Goodwin has a spot on the roster. DeRick Rogers, I think, has impressed through his early workouts here. T.J. Graham has been maybe the most impressive returning veteran on the offensive side of the ball through a couple of weeks of OTAs. Brad Smith, I think, with his experience, has something to offer. So, yeah, it's a crowded field. We talked a lot during the rookie camp about number 14, whose name escapes me now. Help me out, Russ, the rookie who had such a good rookie. Oh, Kaufman, Brad Kaufman, a guy who...
I forgot about him.
Eastern Washington. Brandon Kaufman, a guy who could have something to say, at least in terms of maybe a practice squad spot. I think a guy who's going to get a lot of playing time, at least. Kevin Elliott has had some good moments in the workout so far, and I think that handles most of the receivers. But, I mean, you know the names of the top three or four, Stevie, Woods, Goodwin, I think, by virtue of being a draft pick, probably is solid. T.J. Graham, I think, has solidified his hold in a roster spot. DeRick Rogers, obviously a rookie undrafted free agent, showing well so far. Brad Smith with his experience. Of that group of six, you would think five of them will be on the roster, and it should be a very, very competitive battle as this moves along into training camp.
That's not even mentioning Marcus Easley.
I didn't mention Marcus Easley.
Doran Dickerson,
who's with the receiver group now. Yeah, and it's an uphill battle for some of those guys. And it's a battle that just now, I think, is in the process of being waged. So going to be very, very interesting. Hey, tomorrow night, Sal Capaccio is going to be hosting the show. He'll be right here in our studio at One Bills Drive. And then I'll be back on Thursday night. I've got a golf tournament opportunity tomorrow with Walmart folks, golf tournament to benefit Women and Children's Hospital in Buffalo and the Golisano Children's Hospital in Rochester. So we're looking forward to that, hoping the weather holds out, and Sal Capaccio will be here in studio tomorrow night to take you through the show. So make sure you listen for that. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer, Matthew Collar, our producer, the maestro, Russ Burton, and the Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. Sal Capaccio tomorrow night. I'm back Thursday night. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.